Yeah, I started pretty young. My parents were in the business, and so I kind of fell into it as a child. Through my father, was an actor. My mom was a singer and actress. My first screen test would have been when I was 6 years old, for a movie that actually never got made. But I was my screen test is for a little Mexican boy. In this film called The Rings Around Saturn. And I had to be this little Mexican boy that had a big ball, and he lost his ball, something like that. I was six. A couple of interviews and auditions, I remember, and it was just very informal. I didn't even have an agent. I think it was my father's agent that was sending me out. And then when I was 10, I got the role of Circus Boy, which is being re-released, as a matter of fact, colorized. I was Circus Boy, and that ran for NBC. That ran for like 2-3 years, mid-50s. And after that, I kind of did little bit parts on shows as a teenager a couple times. Mr. Novak, Peyton Place, you know, stuff like that. Until The Monkees, of course, in the mid-60s. Well, the show, The Monkees, originally for me, I mean, it was just an audition, like every other audition I'd been to that week. It was pilot season. And there was about half a dozen shows, I remember, about music and young kids in music that were in development at the time. And I was up for at least two or three of them. I remember there was one show like a Beach Boys kind of surfing band. There was another show like a Peter, Paul, and Mary kind of traveling group. There was another one like the New Christy Minstrels, these bunch of people traveling around in a big bus. There was a few of them, but The Monkees, I remember, and it wasn't called The Monkees originally. I can't remember what the name was. The Monkees was different. First of all, the producers were very young, Bert Schneider and Bob Rapelson. I remember when I walked in the office, they had on jeans and a T-shirt. I thought they were there for the interview, too, but they were the producers, which was very unusual to have producers that young. And they were really part of the scene. They couldn't have been much more than late 20s, early 30s themselves at the time. And they were part of the whole alternative, you know, Beatle, rock and roll, you know, long hair, hippie kind of culture, which made a big difference. Because the other shows, you know, you got the sense that they were being produced by guys sitting in the top of office buildings with suits and ties on thinking, you know, saying, well, let's make a show that kids will really like, you know, let's have them all young and long hair and run around. But Bob and Bert were really part of the scene. You know, they were huge fans of the Beatles and of the whole, you know, kind of scene. So it had a slightly different, you know, feeling to it. I remember right from the very beginning. And even in the first interviews, you know, they were, I could tell they were interested in the improvisational aspects of, you know. But I went in as an actor. As having had a series when I was a kid, I went in knowing what it was about. And I remember leaving thinking, well, this is a good one. I hope I get this. And then I went back for audition after audition and screen test. Looking back now, in hindsight, I can tell that the Monkees was cast like you would cast a Broadway musical. Because I've been in Broadway musicals now, and I know. It had to do with the whole spirit of the entertainer, not just if they looked right and were the right look for the part, which is how you tend to cast most television. It had more to do with, like, the charisma. And you had to have a multitude of talents. You had to be able to act, obviously. You had to be able to sing. You had to be able to play an instrument. I played guitar. My audition piece was Johnny B. Good, Chuck Berry, who I was a huge fan of. You had to be able to improvise, which was my weakest suit at the time, but I did it. And so you had to be able to cover all these bases, like a Broadway musical. In fact, I've often thought the Monkees on television, that was the closest thing to putting a Broadway musical on TV as you possibly, you know, could do at the time, I guess. And I don't know if that was intended, if that was part of their agenda, if that was just intuitive on their behalf. You'd have to ask them. But that's basically what it was. It was screen tests and how you looked in front of a camera and how you performed and how you interacted. And they were much more, I think, concerned about that spirit and the chemistry and stuff, which you have to be in theater, because you can't You can't fool them in theater. Very quickly it became apparent that this was not your normal TV show. That this was not to me. This was not where you just get a script, you learn your lines, you come in, you read your lines, you go home. I mean, very quickly it became apparent that they wanted to create this atmosphere of improvisation, anarchy, because it reflected. The Monkees was about a rock and roll group. The Monkees wasn't a group. The Monkees was a television show about a rock and roll group. This fictitious group that still doesn't exist, never did, unless the four of us get together and we say it exists. Like Yul Brynner recreating the role of the King of Siam. Well, the King of Siam doesn't exist unless Yul Brynner decided he was going to do it. And then it's like Pinocchio coming alive, you know, all of a sudden when the four of us would get together, then the Monkees existed. And it didn't exist until that happened and still doesn't to this day, because it was this television show about this imaginary group. And that's what they wanted. That's what the show was about, always. And it was about a group like, not the Beatles, because they were famous. The Monkees were never famous on television. We were always struggling to be famous. And we had posters of the Beatles on the wall. So we were a struggling group, like all the other millions of groups around at the time. And so that became apparent pretty quick, that that's what it was about. So there was a tremendous improvisational attitude on the set, much like the Marx Brothers must have been, I suspect. It was John Lennon, actually, that made the connection between the Monkees and the Marx Brothers, and I think he was absolutely right. Much closer DNA between the Monkees and the Marx Brothers than the Monkees and the Beatles, for instance. You know, that's different paternity, different genetics. The Monkees is much, much closer to the Marx Brothers. It's like I've often said that the Monkees is to the Beatles what Star Trek is to NASA. You know, they're both very valid in their context, but they're entirely different things. And it was very exciting because, and difficult. And that's one of the reasons I think it only lasted a couple of years, because to try and capture that spirit, to capture that magic, to capture that anarchy and that improvisation is real tough to do on a single camera television show at 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, of course, here was four singularities of musical visions. And we all had very distinct musical visions and tastes. I came from Little Richard and Jerry Lewis and Chuck Berry. David came from Broadway, Tony Newley, you know, Oliver, which he did. Mike came from down home Texas blues, you know, ZZ Top, which became kind of, you know, ZZ Top. Peter came from like the Mamas and the Papas kind of down home folk, you know, folky Arlo Guthrie kind of, you know. And we were all very passionate about these different, very distinct forms of music, which threw the whole thing into kind of a, you know, a tailspin, because whereas in the television show and the comedy, you know, it was our strength having these very distinct characters and personalities. In the music, what do? You go in a studio, and right from day one, when we started playing together, Mike and Peter especially, you know, just were like loggerheads creatively. Not necessarily a bad way, but just creatively, it was like, not that one was better or worse, just very different. And I would come in with, you know, my Jerry Lee Lewis chops, and David would come in singing Anthony Newley. How do you mix Anthony Newley and Jerry Lee Lewis? You know, where, and then ZZ Top and Arlo Guthrie. How does that happen? And to this day, it doesn't happen. The comparison with the Beatles, I think, was always erroneous. And I think it was mostly, I don't think it was so much the fans, because we didn't have the same fans as the Beatles. We had the younger sisters of the older Beatle fans. The Beatles had taken their fans and moved on, started doing Sgt. Pepper and more sophisticated things. And, of course, the younger sisters now didn't have anybody. They didn't want the Beatles because the older sisters had the Beatles. They wanted something new, and here enter the Monkees doing, you know, progressive bubblegum, whatever you want to call it, pop music. And so I never felt that we were never in competition, clearly. And I think it was more the media who didn't know what to call us. Didn't know what to do, didn't know how to explain it, you know. And the media, especially the rock and roll media, who at the time and still, you know, take their rock and roll very, very seriously, you know, they didn't know what to make of it. They had no precedent for this at all. So there was a lot of criticism there, not that it made any difference. It was just so successful, so we didn't care, you know. But I think mostly it was the media who just didn't get it, to be honest. I think it just went right over their heads, you know. It just was something that had never been done, taking and creating this illusion and having it, you know, selling it. And first time that really television and the record industry and the radio industry had really joined forces in this kind of concerted assault on the consumer. You know, there'd been a little crossover. Ricky Nelson and Paul Peterson have had a couple of records. And so it had happened. Elvis Presley was making movies, you know, and playing characters in movies, but he was still Elvis Presley playing. But for some reason, I guess because of television and the first time this had really happened and the rock and roll aspect of it, I think mainly the media just never got it. People in the industry did. Our peers did. Jimi Hendrix was our opening act. You know, he made that choice. And they tended to get it. People in the industry tended to get it. But those outside, and especially the media, God love them, I just don't think they got it at all. I don't remember who mentioned it first, but at some point it was decided that the producers wanted to make a movie, a monkey movie. And we started having talks about it, and we all kind of agreed, I seem to remember, everybody agreeing, we didn't necessarily want to make an hour and a half version of a monkey episode on television. That that would be kind of pointless. By that time, we were also getting a little bit tired of doing the same thing all the time anyway. We'd been on the road, we'd been rock and roll stars, we'd gone to England, we'd partied with the Beatles, you know, and now we were back on the television set filming this show every morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was like, whoa, man, this is like, you know, what a bummer. In retrospect, I think that was a big mistake, but nevertheless, we weren't sure we even wanted to do the TV series again in the same format. So we started having talks about making this movie, and we all had different ideas about what we wanted to do and what we'd be happy in doing, and I don't know what the producers had in mind, but one day Bob Rafelson brought this guy on the set to introduce to us, and he was going to be the guy that wrote the movie that Bob had found. He found this actor that was a B-movie actor, but he really liked and he really thought he was smart and clever, and that he would he was going to be the guy that Bob was going to bring in to kind of get it together and write the movie. And that guy's name was Jack Nicholson. And we all fell in love with him immediately. He was just and still is so charismatic, such a wonderful character. And we just became the best of buddies, all of us. He was so funny and so, such an incredible spirit. So he started hanging out. And he would hang out on the set a lot, and he would come over to all our houses, and he would hang out. He was over at my house all the time, and we were just talking. We'd go party. We'd go here. We'd do that. And then they said, well, what we should do is we should all get together, four, five, six, seven of us, I guess, and go to get out of town and take a break and really hash out, you know, this movie. And by the way, I'll come back to that in a second, but it might help also to think of the monkeys as the producers and the writers, too. You know, in a way, they were part of the group. You can't have the monkeys without, in a way, the Bert Schneider and the Bob Rafelson and the Jack Nicholson and the director and the songwriters, the Neil Diamonds, the Carole Kings. And so in that sense, it's more of a troupe and is not just the four of us. It can't be, because there was so much influence there. So that was a little diversion. Back on track. So we all went to Ojai, California, this resort, got a couple of rooms, and sat in there. I have film of this, actually, of us sitting around this tape recorder that was lying in the middle of the floor, an old little tape recorder, talking and just talking about this movie. And must have been hours and hours and hours of this tape. Well, out of that, Jack took the tapes and went off and wrote the movie Head, along with Bob Rafelson. Originally, it was called Changes, as a matter of fact. I still have the script. And it was and became this incredibly bizarre, psychedelic, very 60s. I'm very proud of it. I think I did some great work in it, but I have no idea what it's about to this day. I'm not sure anybody does. But very psychedelic, excuse me, 60s movie, musical extravaganza. It was not at all like a a monkey episode. Very non sequitur. very like a Rorschach test or some kind of, you know, association, you know, verbal association thing. It was just so bizarre. But a lot of fun. Starred us, of course, the monkeys, and Frank Zappa, Victor Mature, Annette Funicello, Sonny Liston, Carol Doda. I mean, all these bizarre characters. And it was this movie about Hollywood and movies and television and the media and the monkeys and fantasy and reality and the way that Hollywood specifically in the media manipulates that fantasy and how it can become reality to some people. It's about a lot of things like that, you know, on lots of different levels. And it's also just a lot of fun, you know, just to kind of watch. The movie did not do well at all. There was some critical raves, strangely enough, because there had been very few critical raves about the monkeys. But the fans couldn't even see the movie because it was R. It was an R-rated movie. So the fans couldn't even go and see the movie. And they hated it. They hated it because they couldn't see it. And when they did see it, they said, "This isn't the monkeys that we like." There was some really, you know, graphic stuff in there. Not sexually graphic at all, but there was this one sequence. Have you ever seen the movie? Oh, you have. Well, there was this one sequence, because we didn't have the censors to worry about now, of course. There was this one sequence in there about... There's that very famous news footage of that the South Vietnamese colonel or police officer killing that prisoner of war right on the middle of the street. Remember that very classic bit of footage? Horrible, you know, bit of footage. And we showed it like 30 times in the movie. It comes up once, big screen, and then it's showed like in 30 or 40 different little... It's just, you know, really grabbing. So we had saved up all, and Bob and Bert especially, I think, especially Bert Schneider, had saved up all this, you know, anti-war sentiment. And this was our way of saying, you know, this is what we would have liked to have said occasionally, but we couldn't, so you're going to get it now, big time. And we, so there was quite a few pretty heavy statements made that I think just blew, you know, a lot of the kids away, and some of them misunderstood it terribly. I remember this little girl coming up to me at a car wash saying, "How could you show that pro-war stuff in your movie?" And I said, "What? How could you possibly consider that was pro-war?" It's, you know, it was so clearly, you know, an anti-war statement. So it surprised a lot of people. Did not do very well. It's become this kind of cult film. You know, and the thing that I think certainly sustained it, and in a way I think had an awful lot to do with the success of the monkeys, was the quality of the songwriting. Because without having those songs written by Carole King, Neil Diamond, Harry Nilsson, Boyce and Hart, David Gates, John Stewart, Paul Williams, Carol Bayer Sayer, Diane Hildebrand, I mean, the list just goes on and on if you read the list of the songwriters. And they never get enough credit, as far as I'm concerned. And that had to have an enormous, you know, influence and effect on the project as a whole. Yeah, there was us. There was the four of us and our abilities and our talents and our personalities. There were the producers. There were the writers of the television show. There were the directors. But, you know, after us and the writers of the show... The songwriters, you know, had such an enormous, you know, impact. Because without those good songs, you know, I really believe you can't fool all the people all the time. The fact that we're sitting here talking about this today, years later, meant that there had to be something going on there that lasted, you know. You can't fool them. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that these songs, I'm a Believer, Clarksville, Pleasant Valley Sunday, you know, Sometime in the Morning, Daydream Believer. They were great songs. Great songs if we'd done them. Great songs if somebody else would have done them. Great songs if when the songwriter wrote them sitting there at the piano or the guitar. And that had an awful lot to do, I think, with the success and the continued success. Clearly, Hard Day's Night and Help and the Beatles and the Beatle movies had an influence, certainly on the producers and on the network and on the TV show. But again, the Monkees was about the Beatles and all the other groups that were around at the time. And we used a commercial director for the pilot episode, which is what they did when they made Hard Day's Night. They hired Richard Lester because the look of Hard Day's Night was the British commercial look at the time. That's how commercials, television commercials, looked at the time. And because the Beatles themselves didn't have a visual, a filmic look, so very wisely they hired Richard Lester, who was the top British commercial director at the time, and he brought the television commercial look into the. He's responsible for bringing that into the motion pictures, essentially. And so, the Monkees, I think, obviously, there was some heritage there, but I think it became even more like the Marx Brothers eventually, and more like Hell's a Poppin', that old film. And I remember we watched the shows. We watched Help. We watched Hard Day's Night. I'd already seen them as a fan, but we watched them. But we also watched the Marx Brothers, and I think that a lot more of the comedic influence came from the Marx Brothers. We watched Laurel and Hardy. We watched the Three Stooges. We watched lots of reference material.